Hello and welcome to What a Night, part of the 90-minute podcast network, talking everything Tottenham Hotspur. And joining myself, Sean Walsh, this week, I have two special guests. Jude is not here, but I do have 90-minute head of Italian content, Alessandro, and 90-minute head of German content, Jan. So,
hi,
fellas,
Sean.
Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
And Jan, especially, welcome to London, because you're not actually based here. You're on a business trip.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
You brought the weather with you. It's
yeah,
nice here.
Yeah, I should come more often.
Very nice, just for you. So today's episode, we're going to be talking a bit about what the view of Tottenham and their season has been on the continent. There's a few kind of topics that relate to your kind of respective countries. We'll start with you, Alessandro, because Spurs have had quite an Italian influence over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
With Antonio Conte, Fabio Paratici. We talked a lot in the last year. You know, I was a big believer that Antonio Conte could have been the man to deliver Spurs a trophy, that this season there was reasons to be optimistic and positive going into it. What was the view from Italy going into this year? Was there a belief that after getting top four last year that Spurs could have really kicked on and done something with Conte this year?
Yeah, I mean, at the starting grid, when Conte signed for Tottenham, we all thought was the perfect job for him, you know, a club that needs to win and a winner altogether, a huge budget he could spend, because he was complaining when he was at Inter the budget wasn't right. He left Juventus because the budget wasn't right, and when he's back from Chelsea, basically told to everyone in Italy, wow, it's another world, Premier League is perfect, Premier League is what I want. So the Tottenham needed that man, and then basically, I don't know why, he started complaining since day two about everything. So we didn't understand why basically started doing so, but I still believing Tottenham was perfect for Conte, and now if I find myself alone, and because probably nobody wants really him now, because at the end of the day, if you complain about Premier League, what we can give you in Serie A, even the top club, you know, you left Inter,
no money.
Yeah.
But was there a feeling that he was backed properly in the summer with the transfers?
I think there is feeling between Conte and Paratici, you know. So if Paratici tried to sign a player, I think Conte gave him the okay to do so. So Tottenham had the chance to sign an important player like Richarlison, and then it's weird, you know, starting before the season telling, okay, if you want to reach the top, we need to sign 15 players. For me, it's not the correct way to manage the one you have currently. I mean, Tottenham, from the external perspective, is a team with huge potential. You know, in Italy, was the situation with the stadium. So,
yeah.
If you try to look at the Tottenham stadium, you look at the future.
Yeah.
So, there was potential if you sign Richarlison, if you have in your squad Harry Kane and Son, Cuti Romero, was for me the squad was good, but it's like I don't know, I don't know what's really happened with him, but I feel like he missed a really important chance for his career.
For sure, yeah. Now, yeah, let's bring you in quickly, because you're actually an AC Milan fan, even though you're based in Germany.
Yeah.
Were you, and I went to the home leg of our Champions League last 16 tie, and Tottenham really showed nothing. What was your impression coming away from that tie? Were you thinking that, wow, that was actually much easier than expected? Did it surprise you?
Yes, because the matches were in a period in which Milan really sucked. In the Serie A before, I think they conceded so many goals. So when the draw came out in December, I was like, okay, that's a doable opponent. But then Milan were in really bad period after the World Cup. And then if you look at Tottenham's attack, Kane, Son, Kulusevski, Richarlison, you think, whoa. But then if I look at the two matches, you barely didn't create any chance. So yes, it was, to be honest, it was easier than expected.
What was the view from Italy, Alessandro, for after that? Did it look as if Milan had kind of grown up, or was that, did it look as if, wow, Conte really has gone backwards?
I mean, that's what he does normally in Europe, you know, because
yeah, I'm aware.
he has a really good reputation on winning titles when it comes to winning leagues. He had a really good tournament, according to me, in Euro 16 with the national team.
Yeah.
If you look at the squad we had back at the time with Pelé and Eder.
Nearly got to the semis.
So and he lost to the Germany.
The famous Sazza penalty.
Exactly. But if you look at the stats, he struggles in Europe. He wasn't able to go through with Juventus, if you remember correctly.
Yeah.
The game against Galatasaray in the middle of the snow. And that's the point, you know. He ended second with Chelsea in the group stage with Roma and managed to reach the round of 16, and then they were eliminated. Not good tradition, but also for this, I think it was an important aspect for him to grow and to show his personality. Because if you ask, if you demand, if you put yourself between the top manager in Europe with Tottenham, you need to be able, to me, to go over and to reach quarterfinal, especially if the opponent is that's Milan, with all the respect, because Milan at the time had really many issues. Yeah.
Is there a reason that there is a belief why Conte is so bad in Europe? Is it just due to his coaching methods? Because I think we all know, like Allegri, for example, went into Juve after Conte left, and he immediately made them much better in Europe. Is that something that will just kind of stick with Conte forever?
At this point, I would say, unless he accepts another job and he prove he can do it, that's the level. I wouldn't put Conte at the same level as Mourinho or Guardiola, for example.
Yeah. Just quickly touching on Mourinho, because you are a Roma fan.
Yeah.
Seems like you're going to... I think that you'll win the Europa League.
Now, in... Here we say touching wood. In Italy, we touch another stuff, but it's okay.
Gelato.
What's the general feeling about Mourinho and his spell between Tottenham and Roma? Did he come to Roma thinking, oh wow, it's this is big appointment, or was he still a bit tarnished by what happened at Tottenham?
I mean, for us, it was a big appointment.
Mm.
For our rivals, was okay, it's finished, you know. But that's part of the game. And now he proved, doesn't matter how, if he'll manage to win the back-to-back in Europe or not, because Sevilla, to me, is a good opponent. But he managed to bring this Roma twice in a European final. Never happened in stories. Roma played just two finals in almost one century. Two into season, it's heavy. And probably for him it's really important, because now we are listening a lot of rumors about Paris Saint-Germain trying to sign him. I'm really concerned, you know, because despite all the issue and all the stuff, we know Mourinho and Conte are two managers capable to change the mentality of a club.
Mm.
And that's my main concern regarding Tottenham. You know, if Mourinho and Conte didn't succeed to do the switch on the mental side, what we can expect from Tottenham. I mean, are we waiting for Guardiola maybe? Because now it's easy. I mean, if I could choose, I would love to see, for example, Roberto De Zerbi.
I would really like him as well.
As Tottenham manager.
Yeah, I think that he's kind of on the same trajectory. I've made a lot of comparisons that he is at a stage right now that Mauricio Pochettino was at when he was at Southampton and then came to Spurs. I think they're very kind of similar there, and I think that he's going to get a big job very soon.
Yeah, because maybe it's what Tottenham need, no? We saw two similar way of managing style, Conte and Mourinho. They didn't succeed. Maybe you need to try something different.
Yeah. Speaking of something different then, for managers, Jan, you've been quite staunch that Tottenham should have tried a little bit harder maybe for Julian Nagelsmann.
Yeah. So, you know, first he was linked to Chelsea, and everyone in Germany kind of expected him to join because Chelsea, they have financial resources which are mind-blowing. He could build something. You know, in the past few years, there are a lot of Germans coming to Stamford Bridge, so it would have made a lot of sense. The talks broke down. Then he was linked pretty fast to Tottenham. And if you look on paper, that would also make much sense. He made some mistakes at Bayern, that's for sure. So, but in my opinion, he's a very smart guy. And I'm sure he would have learned from those mistakes. And it would be good for him to go to a club which is not on the top level. But still kind of ambitious and has a really decent quality. So, yeah, I think it would have been a perfect fit. Tottenham needs a real rebuild. They would have got a young manager who has already a lot of experience. He plays pretty good football, so it's not like Mourinho ball or something. So I'm kind of I don't know from which side the talks broke down, but if it was on Tottenham side, I think it's a mistake because they should have pushed harder to sign him, because I don't think they could get a better manager in this situation, especially if you look on the next 3, 4, maybe 5 years.
Yeah. And I think I remember when he came to Spurs with his Leipzig side in 2020.
Yeah.
And they completely killed us in the Champions League. It was Spurs didn't have Kane or Son fit, but he completely outscored Mourinho. He outthought Mourinho. I think Timo Werner in particular in those two games was unbelievable. And I think it was around the same time that it talks kind of came out as Spurs were actually looking at Nagelsmann before they brought in Mourinho. And then 2 years ago, before he went to Bayern Munich, it was the same again. So it does feel a bit weird that Spurs have long admired Nagelsmann but haven't been able to get it over the line this time when he is available and they do have a vacancy again. And this kind of manager feels like it would be almost the perfect fit.
Yeah, it would. I really expect him to join a new club this summer because he's so motivated. He's not the guy who says, okay, I'm on the payroll of FC Bayern, I earn my 10 million a year and I do a vacation on the beach or something. That's not him. He's eager to prove himself. And now that there came some doubt after his Bayern stint, I think he's even more motivated to show that he's one of the best young, or even the best young coach in European football.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Quickly switching over to Bayern, because they have been linked with Harry Kane all season long. First came out last summer. It was actually Nagelsmann who got asked about Kane, and he kind of said we'd really like him, but he's a bit out of our price range, and that riled Antonio Conte up the wrong way. He thought it was really disrespectful. And we know how it is with Bayern, that the directors get asked about these transfers all the time. They kind of have to say, there's not our player, we're not going to talk about it. But it felt for a long time as if Bayern were kind of preparing an offer for Kane, but it seems like that's cooled in recent weeks. It looks like they're going to go after Randall Colomwani instead. What's the view of Kane in Germany? Was he viewed as this kind of big superstar striker that would have solved a lot of Bayern's striker woes?
In general, yes. The main issue, if you want to call it that way, is his age. So even Uli Hoeneß, you know, he doesn't operate in the daily business anymore, but he still has a big, big influence. And yeah, a few weeks ago he came out that he wouldn't pay that much money for a player who's already 30. And that's probably the main issue why Bayern won't chase him harder. Because you probably need to pay 100 million, I guess, to get him. And if you look at Bayern, they don't spend that much money normally. And for sure they won't spend it on a player who, how many years does he have left on the top level? Maybe three?
Unless you are a center back, then they spend, no?
Yeah, for center backs. But you also have to see De Ligt, Upamecano, Hernandez. They are at an age where you know they still have 10 years on the highest level.
Their peak is ahead of them rather than behind them.
Yeah, and that's not the case with Kane. So I think that's the main issue. And you also have to see they sold Lewandowski last summer for, I think it was 45 million. Of course, he's 2 or 3 years older, but you don't sell Lewandowski for 45 and then you say, okay, I agree to pay 100 million for Harry Kane. And maybe, but this is only my feeling, also the transfer of Sadio Mane gave a bit of a warning to Bayern, so that a superstar of the Premier League doesn't automatically fit in the Bundesliga, because Sadio Mane came as
I thought he was going to be really good
as the superstar, but now that the season is over, his first year in Munich was a more or less catastrophe. So there are many smaller reasons, I would say, why I don't think this transfer will happen.
That's interesting, actually, because I hadn't actually thought of the Mane piece of it, because I think he's around the same age as well. So that would actually make total sense. Kane turns 30 this summer. Ali, no chance of Kane going to Juventus this time?
No, 20 million on loan
for 2 years.
Not 20 million loan for 2 years. I don't think it's possible with Tottenham, you know.
Just to round up on that point, I meant to ask you earlier. Fabio Paratici came to Spurs 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
Very quickly raided Serie A for some of the kind of maybe underappreciated players there. Did it feel like it was ever really going to work at Spurs for him? Because he had all these links to Juventus, and it came out in November of last year, his involvement in the kind of the financial mismanagement of the club, and now he's got this world ban.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you went back 2 years ago and you said to me, Paratici is going to get a ban for world football for this kind of stuff, it would not have shocked me.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, without touching on Juventus' situation, because, I mean, this is not the place to do so, I would say Paratici knows really well Italian football.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I would say also football in general. It was really promising. Started working with Marotta at Juventus. They worked together at Sampdoria, and they were in charge when Sampdoria reached the top four in 2009-2010. Really, really good football knowledge, but as it stands for the ones who goes on the pitch, you know, Premier League is another level. So even on the management side, you need to prove yourself you're another level. Obviously for him was a huge chance. I think you need time when you want to change the mentality of a club, staying on the legal side, I mean.
we're trying not to get sued.
Exactly. But he didn't have the time, and obviously, apparently he's responsible for what he did during the COVID with salaries and stuff.
Yeah.
So this was banned for international football, and now I think his career, in a certain sense, it's a bit compromised at top level in European football, because I don't see anybody outside Italy, because in Italy you never know, trying to sign Paratici to run their club, you know.
Yeah, don't want to be tarred with that brush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, this has been good for us. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for talking to me about Spurs.
Pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
It's
been really good. Great. Thank you, guys. Okay, I'm now joined by 90-minute French editor, Quentin. Quentin, glad to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be there.
We were going to do a podcast about Aston Villa a few weeks ago because you're actually an Aston Villa fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Good end of the season for Villa.
Yeah, rivaling Spurs for that Conference League place. I think it looks like you're going to get it now as well. Like, as long as you beat Brighton. And
I'm touching wood at the moment. we just need a good result against Brighton, and a better result than Spurs to qualify.
And so Brentford.
Yeah, exactly. But
that'd be really
funny. Hopefully.
Okay, so I just wanted to talk to you about the view from Spurs, the view from France in Spurs. Like, what's kind of been the reaction to this Premier League season and the Champions League for Spurs?
It's a tricky question, actually, because in France, people don't actually particularly rate Spurs.
Really?
No, it's like one of those clubs that if they perform, people just think, yeah, okay, they're doing well.
Mm.
And if they don't, then people don't say, like, oh, we are missing Spurs here.
What would they say? It's a comparable club to Spurs, then, in that sense?
In France, you mean?
Yeah. Or it's like in general, like, who are the clubs that across Europe that are seen as Spurs' as equals in that sense?
I would say maybe Roma in Italy. It's
okay.
Very similar to Roma, I think. And the only difference is that now that they have Mourinho in, it changed the perception of Roma in France. But
yeah.
Usually, I would really compare Spurs to Roma. And maybe in France it would be Monaco, maybe, which is a major club in France. But lately they haven't been really performing. And if they don't qualify for the Champions League, people are like, okay, if it's
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, understandable, yeah. And I want to talk to you a little bit about Hugo Lloris.
Yeah.
Tottenham club captain. He's been captain for 8 years now, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He spent much of his prime at Spurs. Sometimes linked away, not like heavily linked away. Like, it was, I don't think he was ever close to leaving Tottenham until this summer. It looks like he might go to Saudi Arabia or MLS.
Mm-hmm.
What's the view from France that, because he's also France's all-time appearance holder as well. He was the captain that won the World Cup. What's the view that of Lloris's club career?
I think people are very impressed of his career in terms of the number of appearances he made.
Okay.
People actually rate him in terms of career as a character. It's pretty logical that he didn't move away from Spurs to me, because he seems to be very attached to every club he plays for.
Yeah.
He used to play for Nice. In Nice, he left when there was nothing else to play for. Same for Lyon, when he already won some trophies. And then after, the logical move was to go away in the Premier League, which is the best league in the world. And there he achieved what he needed to achieve. Maybe could have achieved more with maybe one title or maybe like something better. But in terms of his career, I think he achieved what he needed to achieve. He became maybe not a legend, because legend is a very strong word for Spurs, but he became one of the major players in the 21st century, in my opinion. And that's maybe the view from France.
Yeah.
But he became someone that counts in the history of Spurs, in my opinion. And that's something that he will be remembered for.
Yeah, it definitely. He's come up with a lot of huge moments over the years. I've been critical of him when he's had dips. You know, I think his Spurs were quite weird. He came in, it was really good right away.
Yeah.
As Spurs got good, his performances went down, and when we needed him to be good again, they went back up again. And then it's only in the last year and a half that they've really properly kind of fallen through the floor again.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like when he joined Tottenham? Because I remember being so excited by that at the time. I could not believe that it was like, wow, Tottenham are signing Hugo Lloris. This is one of the best goalkeepers in Europe already. He's so young. Like,
yeah.
Was it surprised that he went to a club probably as low as Tottenham? Could he not have held out for a bigger move, do you think?
I don't think the spaces left when he joined Spurs were very important. So, for example, there was no space for him at Manchester United.
Yeah.
There was no space for him at Liverpool or these kind of clubs, maybe Man City. So at the time, it was the best move he could have made. There was a very good project in place for Spurs, with like the Modric and maybe Bale area. So it was the good time for him to move to such a club, and there was a long term project for him where he would be waiting for maybe 5-6 years to before another move. It ended being way more than that. But in my opinion, it was the right choice for him because he would play instantly. He didn't have like a proper other goalkeeper to face for the number one spot. And yeah, in terms of what he did in France, there was nothing else he could have done in France because he won every single trophy that he should have won. Maybe the Ligue 1 title would be like one of his regrets, but still, I think it was the logical move for him to go to Spurs and to try and build something for Spurs.
Yeah, it's ironic that you said that about he was going and start straight away, because he didn't come in and start straight away. He was on the bench for a month or two. Brad Friedel, who was 40 years old at the time. Yeah, yeah.
I even forgot that.
Villa and legend.
Yeah, definitely. I really liked Brad Friedel. But yeah, I even forgot that. But in my opinion, it was the right move because from France, we always knew he was going to take this first spot position. And for long term.
Yeah.
And that was a normal move for him and the right place at the right time.
Okay, that's interesting. I remember we drew Lyon in the Europa League that season. I was at the home game where Gareth Bale scored 2 free kicks and then Samuel Umtiti with one of the very best goals that I've ever seen live in a stadium. I could not believe it. But I think he played in the away leg, but not the home leg. But I thought it was kind of just interesting that we played him then. So do you not think that Lloris has wasted his career then? Do you think that he's had a good, solid career club level anyway, that he's being the main guy for one of Europe's top teams, even if he hasn't won a trophy, that's enough?
So it's a very interesting question because in my opinion, when I saw him starting with Nice, I thought like, wow, this is the new France goalkeeper for generations. But at the same time, when you compare him to maybe Grégory Coupet, who used to be Lyon legend, and he played a bit for France, even if he was on the shade of Barthez, he was very talented, very young, and with a maturity that at such age, goalkeepers don't usually have. So he was considered as one of the generational talents. But at the same time, when you look at him, you see some parts in his game that are missing. And this is what prevented him from playing maybe to Barcelona, to Real Madrid, to some very, very top clubs. But there are only a very few top clubs in Europe. So, in my opinion, he didn't waste his career. He became maybe one of the major names at Spurs. Mm. He built something on the long term with France and with Spurs, and this is what made him such a character at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I doubt he would be like, he would have become an even better player at the end.
Yeah.
I just think he reached the very top.
Yeah.
And his lacks in his game.
Yeah, we know. Just you speaking there, that made me think of two points. The first is that you're right, the things that he lacks in his game, because when he came to Tottenham, he was viewed as this modern goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
He was so quick off his line, and you know, people were still trying to figure out how to play high lines and play those kind of aggressive tactics, and he was seen as, wow, this is like, this guy could be like Neuer. And then as the decade has gone along, you realise his kicking is really bad. It was okay for a point last season, but is this season again reverted to type.
There are actually two things that are really missing in his game. First one is his kicking, as you mentioned. When you want to be a very top keeper and to play at the very top clubs in Europe, you can't if you don't have like an ability to kick properly the ball.
Yeah.
And the other one is when you face a penalty, you need to stop somewhere at some point. And I don't know if you have the stats of penalty. He stops.
Quite bad. I've seen them. Yeah. But he didn't. That's weird because he did have a stretch in the 18-19 season where he saved three in a row. He saved one against Jamie Vardy.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple weeks later, he saved one in the last minute of North London derby against Aubameyang. And then in one of the first games at the new stadium, he saved a penalty from Aguero in the Champions League.
I remember that.
But those are like pretty much the only three saves he's ever had in his career, it turns out.
Definitely.
Cause you're right, because I've seen the stats before, but before I saw the stats, I assumed that he was good at them because that stood in my mind so much. But when the World Cup final went to penalties, I had no faith that he was going to do anything.
Yeah, definitely. And when you compare, we have another example now. In Maignan.
Yeah.
Maignan is a specialist. He's a penalty specialist. And he's the one maybe able to reach the very top because he has the ability to kick the ball, the ability to save on his line, and also to save penalties, which is three qualities that are actually the three main ones for a modern goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think to Lloris's credit, and I always took Spurs' Amazon documentary with a pinch of salt, because you see what they want you to see.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that did stand out to me was in the first few episodes, Lloris is injured, so he's not there. But when he comes back and you see the presence that he has in that dressing room, the command that he has, the fluency with which he speaks, his English is phenomenal in those kind of pressure moments. He says the right things, he knows the right kind of triggers to say. I understand now why, for example, Pochettino kept him on for so long, and he was seen as like the extended arm, the fifth member of his coaching team. I do understand how important that is, and if you're in the day-to-day, why you wouldn't look to bring in another keeper when that you got a figure like that for so long.
Yeah, definitely. And even if you see his lacks in his game, he's a proper leader. He can't be a captain with his club and with France for so long.
Yeah.
And he can't have like a World Cup in his trophy cabinet if he's not a proper leader, and a leader by example. Because he's a hard worker and he brings people together to create a proper unity in a group. So
that's
the secret of his longevity at Spurs.
Yeah, I think we're a bit too close to it right now, but I do think in maybe 5-6 years time we will look back, and I think the term legend will be used for Lloris at Spurs. I think there's only been one keeper in history who's been better in terms of ability, and that's Pat Jennings, one of the best goalkeepers ever. But I think apart from that, you think the amount of service he's given, you know, it's not necessarily his fault that Spurs haven't won a trophy, for example.
Definitely. And maybe that's more the gestion of the after Modric and Bale era.
Yeah.
With players that are not the same quality, and like the results were not always regular.
So especially the last few seasons.
Exactly, that's the thing. And as a goalkeeper, he's not responsible.
Yeah, it's hard. You can only play one goalkeeper. And I just want to quickly finish with what are some young players in Ligue 1 that you think Spurs might be looking at? Because I remember this time last year, we were in Barcelona for our summit, and there were two players that you were saying that to keep an eye on. The first was Kefren Turam of Nice. The second was Benoit Badiashile, who's now at Chelsea.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of like the look of him, wonder, he's left-footed, he's young, he's physically imposing. Why weren't Spurs in for a player like that? Because that's a player that we need, and we've got Clement Longley, who's like none of those things.
Yeah, definitely. You know what? I think Longley could be a good option for Spurs to keep him at the club. Maybe not as the very first option, but it could be a good addition to a squad where he would be with two or three very good centre-backs. But yeah, I think Badiashile was one of the players that Spurs couldn't grab last summer, maybe last winter as well, but with Chelsea it was a bit difficult. But yeah, it's some time wasted, I think, for Spurs there. But one name I would recommend maybe is Luis Openda, the striker
from
Lens.
Yeah, I like the look of him as well, to be fair.
Yeah, he's a proper striker, modern striker. He's got the pace, the tactical technical ability. Mm. He's tactically disciplined, and he's also very very creative. And if I hope not for you, Harry Kane was to leave, I think some very good option would be on the market.
Yeah.
And Luis Openda would be a bargain for Spurs. Maybe not on the very first season, but on the long term, you will have for your money, I think.
Yeah, I do. The Ligue 1 market, there's so many good young players there. You just wonder, this is the kind of market that Spurs should be.
Definitely, and that's the problem with Ligue 1, is that we don't have the financial ability to compete with the Premier League. But we could be this league bringing the players from lower leagues to a very good level, where those players, those very few players who are actually really good, could go before going to the Premier League.
That's the way they're marketing it, isn't it? They call it the League of Talents.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And we have like very talented youngsters as well from the academies of the club. And so many players are very talented now. And we have some players like Lenny Yoro from Lille. We have Elias Benseguir from Monaco. Those players are from academies of our club. And I would bet on them to grab a very good move in the next few years. Yeah. So keep an eye on them.
Conton, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Really hope you enjoyed that special. Jude and I will be back this week for a normal episode of the podcast, but we'll see you then. Thank you for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.